I'm Brandi Cruz, coming up today on Undivided. It turns out the WNBA is full of hateful bigots, and none of them are named Caitlin Clark or Sophie Cunningham. Plus, United States Senator Patty Murray was spreading lies about the detention of an illegal alien, and Fauci pleads the fifth. A lot. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. So we had, as you know, a rally, a pro-Sophie Cunningham rally outside of the stadium in Seattle, Climate Pledge Arena, for the Storm Fever game. Here's some pictures of this, what did they call it in the sports media and the media? Anti-trans rally. How scary is that? Oh, are the balloons? I know balloons do scare some people. I believe there's actually a scientific name for that fear. Not sure what it is. But there were, you know, maybe 70 of us who were out there, and it was all just about love. It was about supporting Sophie Cunningham for her willingness to stand up for women and girls. And I even said, you know, so we also bought some tickets for the game, specifically for some of the teen athletes in the front row so they could wear their gear. They could have signs about loving Sophie Cunningham and get a little visibility on those. But I specifically said before people went into the stadium that we needed to respect not only the rules outside, which is why we, you know, did what we always do and had a nice peaceful rally where we obeyed the rules that were given to us. But I also said it's important that we follow the rules of the stadium.
When you go in, if you're going into the game, we want to respect the rules that they have in the game. No blatantly political messaging. So if you brought a sign that is political in nature, just make sure you leave it outside because we don't want to disrupt the game in any way. Unlike other people, we're not going to glue ourselves to the floor and demand that people listen to us. And unfortunately, some of the female athletes who wanted to be here no longer felt safe because of some rhetoric online calling this a transphobic rally, which it's not. And so their parents have brought them inside, but they'll meet us in there after the fact. That's just the reality of what we're faced with. The media isn't honest.
Yeah, the media is horrible, in fact. So let me go through the whole series of events, because there is some misinformation about this that's been circulating online. So I just want to talk about what happened from my perspective, having been there. So outside, when we were doing this rally, folks had some signs that were like, yes on the initiative. So in Washington State right now, and one of the reasons this is so important here and why I care about it and so many teen athletes care about it is in November, voters here in one of the most blue places on earth will decide whether to protect girls' sports. And a yes vote on the initiative means that you want to keep biological boys out of girls' sports. And so those specifically were the signs that I'm like, those aren't going to fly inside because they will check it when you go in. It's against the rules and we don't want to cause a disturbance, you know, in the name of Sophie Cunningham. I don't think Sophie would want that either. So it's really just about the girls being able to go in. And you saw, we got a bunch of front row seats. So if you're watching the game, you probably saw a bunch of XXXY athletic gear and some of the signs that were just, thank you, Sophie, and talking about, we love you, Sophie. And those aren't political in nature. It's just young girls looking up to a role model of theirs. And I will tell you that some of these girls, and one of the faces will, a couple of the faces will look familiar because they've been on this show as teen athletes speaking about their experience in either competing against boys or and or losing to boys. One of them you see there, Annalie Wilson, you know, she was really one of the first voices to come out, started speaking out at 15 years old because she lost a state championship in track and field to a biological boy. She's had to compete against boys multiple times. This isn't some sort of fictitious thing for her. This is her reality. And if she meets that boy every single year who's in the same category as her, I believe still this, I believe the same grade as her, then she's gonna lose every single time because she's a girl and he's a boy. So these girls were so excited. I mean, Annalie and her friend, here's this great picture. Apologies, because I don't know who took this picture. I saw it shared everywhere, and I wanted to give whoever took it credit, but I just didn't see anywhere online it being attributed to anyone. So Annalie and her friend had the like best seats in the whole place, thanks to a generous donor who bought them at $1,300 a piece. And I knew that maybe there was going to be some trouble because I look over and I see this individual sitting next to them with a "No Hate in These United States" signs. And it has like a little lightning bolt with the pride flag colors. But I'm like, okay, that's fine. Maybe they're adults and they can have their little sign, and Annalie can have her sign that says, "Thank you, Sophie, for speaking up," and it'll all be fine. So I look over at halftime because I'm in front row seats and I'm kind of chaperoning three other girls because their parents are sitting up higher and we wanted to make sure the girls got the best seats. And so we're under the hoop side on the storm side. And so I can see Annalie and her friend. And I'm just keeping an eye on all of them, right? I'm just adult chaperoning. And I look over at halftime and I see Annalie crying. And so I'm like, oh my gosh, what's going on? And so I get up, it's halftime, you know, and I make my way over there. And I, you know, and I'm not a mother. But when you see a 16-year-old, even if it's not your own child, who should be having the time of her life, in tears at the front row of a game where she gets to watch one of her heroes play, something primal comes out inside of you. And I was like, I'm ready to throw down. Violence isn't the answer, but tonight violence might be the answer. Because, I mean, it was like my own daughter. And I was just like, oh my gosh, what's wrong? And so they explained to me, and she's in tears. And she says, this woman came up to us, and she yelled at us, and she said we were effing insane, and she said, how dare you come here and pull this shit, I hope God, like, talked about God, and right, or Annalie's family's very religious, and said, I hope God forgives you for what you're doing. And so, I mean, you're a 16-year-old girl, and it's this older woman coming up to you, and you think, like, that they're gonna say something nice, and then all of a sudden they're swearing at you in front of other people, right? And so at that time, she told me this, and I'm immediately like, oh, hell no. And I go grab this security guard, who's this older woman, and I say, hey, I've got two 16-year-olds crying in the front row right now because they say a woman came up to them and swore at them, like cussed them out, yelled at them, etc. And this security guard, she was great. She was livid. She's like, oh, absolutely not. And she went over and she talked to Annalie and her friend, and she said, you should not be treated like this. Do you know who did it? And they just described the woman, but they didn't know who it was. And a fan next to them kind of said, oh, you don't know who that is? Like, oh, she's with the team, or she works for the team or something. And the girls are like, okay. So I just tell the security guard, look, we'll try to find this woman in the crowd. And if we do, we'll let you know. And the security's like, guard's like, absolutely, let us know. So halftime's over, the third quarter comes back in. And all of a sudden they notice that across, sitting in the front row across from them on the court, is this woman. She's sitting next to Sue Bird, to the left, if you're looking at it here, next to Sue Bird. Older woman, white hair. She's got the brown thing around her, scarf or something around her. There she is, right? And Annalie says, that's her. That's the old woman with the cane who hobbled over here at halftime and cursed us out, made her cry. And immediately in my mind, I'm like, she's front row sitting next to Sue Bird. I said, I bet she's like someone important, but I don't know. I'm not familiar with everything. So at this point, I go over to security again, and there's another male security guard who was perfectly nice to us and knew the situation that had happened. And I go to him and I say, hey, you know, that woman sitting next to Sue Bird is the woman who made the girls cry. And he's like, which one? You know, and he's looking. And I'm like, the one white, whatever. And he says, oh, that's a co-owner of the team. Her name is Celeste Keaton. There she is. The woman on the left is co-owner, and that's her wife, her longtime partner. So I'm like, okay. So there's actually video of me talking to security, because I go over and I'm like, I'm responsible for these girls. And I go over to security and I'm telling them, and they were nice, right? But they say, oh, that's the co-owner of the team. And I say, okay, and? I'm thinking, why does it matter? I don't care if you're the co-owner, Sue Bird, or who it is. It's against the fan rules of conduct. So I'm like, can't we do something about this right now? I mean, security had basically said, if you find this woman, let us know. Well, I found her. Sorry that she happens to be the co-owner of the team, but she cursed out two 16-year-olds. I'm like, can we do something about it? And then one of the security guards says, well, you could go up. There's an office up here. You could go up and talk to him. And the male security guard says, you know, the best course of action is probably just to write a letter to the team. So they're telling me to write a letter to the team, okay? So before I get to why no other fan would be treated like that, any other fan, they would go kick out. I did talk to Annalie and her friend after the game was over about just their perspective on what happened.
Well, we were just sitting there with our signs that said, like, we love Sophie, like, thank you, Sophie, for speaking up. And so we were holding on, just watching the game. Again, like, we were being super great. We hadn't said anything to anyone else. We were being super respectful. We were just holding our signs and cheering for both teams. Mm-hmm. And this lady, older lady, comes up to us. And she comes up to us, and at first I think she's going to be nice. And then she asks, like, what are you guys doing? Something like
that.
And then it was like, Jesus loves everyone. That's what she told us. And I was like, oh, I know. Like, I'm religious. Like, I know. Like, I know.
Nice.
Yeah. And she's like, oh, I hope Jesus can forgive you for what sin you've done. And like, something like that. And then she told us that we were effing insane. And,
she went like this.
Yeah.
She's like, you better stop this.
And stop pulling this. Yeah.
And
for you guys
I hope
come
God
here
can save you.
This. Yeah.
She said, for you to come here and pull this shit.
Yeah.
She said the word.
Yeah.
Did she say effing insane or?
No, she said the word.
And nobody around you spoke up for you.
No.
So, no.
I will say, Annalie, when I came over, you were in tears.
Yeah, I've never been yelled at like that. I mean, I've had people hate on me on the internet, but, like, it doesn't really affect me as much because it's just people online, but that just took me by surprise because I thought she was going to be nice, and then she starts, like, screaming at us and cussing at us, so yeah.
And so you said she walked away, and we thought that was kind of it, but she mentioned something to you about, like, working for the team or...
There was another lady that like told us like we were able to have our opinions, but we needed to not be political about it. And I tried to explain to her I wasn't trying to be political. I was just trying to support Sophie and support the other teams.
And you were just sitting there watching.
Yeah, we hadn't interacted with anyone except for like saying excuse me.
Yeah.
Like we were really nice and stuff. And then this lady told us like, well, you know who that is? And we were like, no.
So what was your reaction when I texted you that is the owner of the team?
It's just sad.
We were like, what? Yeah, we were shocked.
Yeah,
it's disappointing though too, because she's also a woman and she just kind of cussed out two 16-year-olds that were just trying to have fun. We weren't trying to be political. You're just trying to support Sophie, which I guess maybe that.
And so overall, because I know that wasn't the only person who was like giving you a hard time, kind of. I mean, did you feel like they've got their no hate signs up, and did you feel welcome?
No, the whole time we were kind of on edge. I was like, should we pull our sign in? I don't know.
Yeah.
And the lady was sitting right across from us, and the two people on the side of us were like turning their back and trying to sit as far away from us. They did not.
Because
one
of them, when you sat down, did you notice that they had hate in these United States?
I didn't notice it till after she had said something like, Sophie's not actually speaking up for girls, which we all assume she is. But anyways. Yeah.
I mean, just in general, like, you're at this sporting event that really is about the peak of female athletics. And for them, the owner, to treat you in that way for wearing this t-shirt, I mean, what do you take away from that?
That maybe we're not being very hateful, and maybe they should work on being more kind to people, even though our opinions differ. Because we were being respectful and kind to people, and I don't care if you think something else, it's your opinion. But obviously, she was not happy.
Yeah. All right, girl.
And you've got 16-year-old girls who are wise enough to know, you can have your opinion, but don't yell at me, don't cuss at me, don't ruin my experience of the game. And you have those two 16-year-old girls who kept themselves. They weren't harassing the individual next to them with the no hate sign. You just don't see it go the other way around, where it's like sane people can be in their own space and say, yeah, somebody over there is saying something or doing something or has a message I disagree with, but I'm not going to go harass them. I'm not going to go spit on them. I'm not going to go, you know, swear at them. I'm not going to do any of those things. But the left just cannot help itself. The radical left absolutely cannot help itself. And in this case, it's a co-owner of the team. And the rules of conduct that the WNBA has in place, and specifically the Seattle Storm has in place, are very clear on that kind of behavior. Any in-arena comments that are discriminatory toward people based on their religious beliefs is against the rules. Well, they brought up God. Oh, I hope your God forgives you. Any in-arena comments that use profanity that are offensive, abusive, disparaging, demeaning, are strictly against the rules, and they violate the WNBA's fan code of conduct. So what happens when the co-owner of the team violates the WNBA's fan code of conduct and gets her old ass up and hobbles across the freaking floor to harass two 16-year-old girls? And this is a woman, by the way, who, is held up in the media throughout the years as someone who's a champion for women. Oh, champion for the WNBA. Not a single one of those WNBA players would want to play against a man. Not a single one of those team owners or any team owner of any WNBA team in the nation would want to have to play against a team that has a man on it. But maybe if they did have a man on their team, the Storm wouldn't have lost 7 in a row last night. Any other fan in the stadium who would have acted the way Celeste Keaton acted would have been ejected. No question in the world. Had I acted that way, got up, went and swore at two people, let alone children, and made them cry, I would have been ejected and I would have deserved it. But I would never do that because I'm not mentally disturbed and insane. And that wasn't the end of it. And I said last night when I got home, I was so mad, like my motherly instincts had kicked in. And I was like, I will spare no one. Here's two girls who decided it would be a good idea to try to trip one of the teen athletes who we were there with. Callie Keeler, who you guys know, who is the girl who had to wrestle a boy unbeknownst to her. Callie Keeler had gotten up to go check on Annalie while she was crying, and these two absolute detestable creatures attempted to trip her and then laughed about it. Well, there are their faces. Let's find out who they are. Maybe they're someone of importance too. It is always the people who preach love and inclusion, who think they are morally superior, who are the most detestable, hateful bigots on the planet. If I have learned anything in the last 5 years, I have learned that. And on top of it, the special treatment that they can just get away with it. And this is a separate thing because it wasn't related to the XXXY, but you know, Sophie Cunningham gets introduced and the crowd just boos her. Caitlin Clark, boo. I mean, above and beyond how you would boo like an opposing team, sort of in a playful way, right? And then after the game, when the Storm lost their 7th game in a row to the Indiana Fever, one fan, a Caitlin Clark fan, was spit on by a Storm fan. There's the woman.
Here she is. She's going to be famous on TikTok.
Can you just play the beginning of that again? This bit? How disgusting. And what are you, 7D? Just grotesque. Because your team lost, again, a 7th game in a row to a really good team, and it was likely that they were going to lose. So here you have the Storm, and I had one of the girls with me who stood up in between gameplay to take a picture, fans behind us booing her aggressively, white fans, middle-aged white women, because she was wearing an XXXY shirt. And let me just say about the middle-aged white woman thing, for the love of God, for the record, where we were sitting underneath the hoop, the fans were lovely. We were sitting next to a nice couple. And they couldn't understand, black couple, couldn't understand what all the crazy white women were freaking out about. Nicest people on the planet. So not everyone was horrific, but there is absolutely a progressive white liberal woman problem. And they're about love and inclusion and no hate here, except let's make 16-year-old girls cry. Let's try to trip a 15-year-old girl. Let's spit on the opposing fans. Absolutely disgusting behavior. There's something else going on here that I actually think is a violation of state campaign laws. So as I played at the beginning, there's a reason I played it. And I'm going to save this a comment from the Storm for the end. Is that okay? There's a reason I played this at the beginning with me saying, hey, don't bring the political signs in here, like the yes on the initiative signs, because I was like, those are for sure political. That's not even a gray area. They're going to take them away anyway. So let's not do that. So you can imagine my surprise when we get in there and we see dozens of no hate in Washington state signs that say vote yes or vote no on initiative 001 and 638, the initiative to protect girls' sports and the initiative to restore parental rights. I'm like, I just told everybody to leave their yes on these signs outside because it says very clearly in the rules, no political signs. And security at the door was checking people's signs to make sure that they were acceptable. And so I thought, I mean, these were everywhere. And frequently they were putting them on the Jumbotron over and over and over again. No hate in Washington state. Vote no, vote no. And I thought, why isn't anybody taking their signs away? And then I thought about, you know, what else is odd? Outside before the game, we were told by Storm Security, you have to stay on the public sidewalk for your rally. And so we did. But then we noticed that above us, where it's like technically part of the entry to the stadium, where we were told we could not go, the no hate in Washington state, the pro boys and girls sports people were allowed to stand for an hour. We had just been told you can't be up there. But the no on keeping boys out of girls sports people were able to be up there. So we talked to two security guards individually, separately, who said that the Seattle Storm made a one night exception for political signs at their game so that the no hate in Washington state signs would be allowed in. They weren't just allowed in. Our understanding is they were handed out and they were put on the Jumbotron. Vote no, vote no. That's a massive in-kind political contribution. So we're working to get our hands on that actual directive. But again, we had went out independently confirmed that those were going to be allowed, just those no hate signs for this game only, to combat what? The hate of Sophie Cunningham and the fact that we'd have a few girls there with XXXY shirts on. I mean, that absolutely, I think, is a violation of campaign laws. So I know that we're going to probably pursue some sort of PDC complaint against the WNBA, the Seattle Storm, Climate Pledge Arena, or whoever had involvement in that. Now, after the game, the Fever declined to take questions. They didn't make Sophie Cunningham or Caitlin Clark available to answer questions. But at the post-game press conference for the Storm, there's this like totally unhinged WNBA reporter named Roberta, who asked about the anti-trans rally.
Coach, there was an anti-trans rally before the game, inspired by a WNBA player as a member of the LGBTQ plus community. And in your workplace, what was your reaction knowing that this was happening right outside of your door?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Seattle and this organization and Climate Pledge, like, we always want to be an area where people feel welcome coming into this building. I think we've always done a really good job with that. So I know our organization was, you know, working closely with Climate Pledge and with security to just make sure that, you know, everybody feels safe and included and welcome when they walk in the store. And from what I understand, that was successful.
Everybody should feel safe and welcome and included. I got a text from one of the teenage girls who came with us, and I won't use their name, but she's 18 years old. She sent me that clip and she said this, again, wiser than any adult. It was not successful at all. I felt no sense of security whatsoever and was on edge the whole night looking out for the girls I was with, including myself. I felt so unwelcome and I was just sitting there wearing a shirt. I'm so glad I'm able to be included in this, and I hope people can understand that you don't have to be hostile to get a point across. Clearly we got ours across by just sitting there. And so when you say we want fans to feel welcome and included, no, you want fans who agree with your politics to feel welcome and included. The co-owner of the team, Celeste Keaton, wants fans who agree with her politics to feel welcome and included. And if they don't, she'll curse them out. Even when they're sitting in, may I say, very, very expensive seats. The co-owner of the team, Celeste Keaton, doesn't want politics involved, unless it's the politics she agrees with, and then they'll make a one-night exception to allow the No Hate in Washington State signs, which, by the way, has proven to be the most hateful political organization in existence. And what's interesting is, you know, look, as far as fan bases go, I think the WNBA is probably as liberal as they come, and specifically the WNBA in Seattle. I don't know that that really is a surprise to anyone. But the truth is, we had a ton of fans there. I had people in Storm shirts coming up to me. Oh my gosh, I love everything you're doing. Thank you so much for standing up for girls. We were taking pictures. And I was actually very surprised. But the truth is that, again, it's an 80-20 issue. We just happen to have this high concentration of super ideologues here who have just gone absolutely batshit crazy. So crazy, they're willing to try to trip teenage girls. They're willing to curse out teenage girls. They're willing to boo teenage girls. Never in my existence would I ever do such a thing. No sane person would do such a thing. So here's what needs to happen. The Seattle Storm needs to apologize. Celeste Keaton needs to apologize. And I believe that Celeste Keaton should get the punishment that any other ticket holder would receive. I think that they should not allow her to come to a few games as a punishment for what she did. And do I know if they're going to apologize? Probably not. And maybe I should thank them because it leads to more attention to the fact that they're on the side of the unhinged. But I mean, gosh, you guys. I mean, Anna Lee in particular, when I told her you're going to sit front row, mid-court, she was so excited to see Caitlin Clark, to see Sophie Cunningham. And I hadn't been to a WNBA game forever. They're great athletes. They really are fantastic athletes. And it was a really fun game to watch. But like you have this girl who's looking forward to it, stayed up all night, giggling and making signs with her friends. And then by halftime, she's reduced to tears because of unhinged, ideologically driven adults who can't even stand to have a small political disagreement with a child. That's what tells you that we're on the right side. We're on the side of people who aren't vicious, violent, angry, horrible human beings. And that will tell you every single time that you're on the right side of history. All right, coming up next, turns out Senator Patty Murray was not telling the truth about an illegal alien detained by ICE. We will have the details for you. First, if you're thinking about selling your home, maybe you just got to get out of Washington State. I hear it all the time. Or maybe you're downsizing in retirement or something. Reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. He's been doing this for a long time. He's been through all the market ups and downs. And this is a weird market we're in. There's a ton of listings on the market, which means that, you know, you have some competition out there if you're selling your home and there's not as many people coming into the state right now to buy them. So you need a game plan, and you need a game plan early. And Wes is the guy. He's going to go through a market analysis, talk about his Listing Boost concierge service, which just is designed to make your listing stand out in a sea of other listings. And we hear from so many Undivided viewers and listeners who said that Wes made the experience of selling a home stress-free and as seamless as possible. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. All right, an update. So, poor me. Brandy, why you do this? Yesterday, I had a soft-hearted moment. I'm all for the deportations, but I saw this video of a husband and father being arrested by ICE, and it did pull at my heartstrings a little bit, because you got the wife in the road, and she's just like, please. And they've been married, I think, 20 years or something, and, you know, he's a member of the community. And I said at the time, like, look, we had this unprecedented surge of illegals into the country. And so I do think that the steps that President Trump has to take have to be extraordinary and they have to be pretty wide ranging. But that doesn't mean that my heart doesn't look at that and say, OK, I feel for that woman's or that woman and his family and stuff. And then Patty Murray had posted about this. She said, on Thursday, ICE needlessly detained Eduardo Esperanza, a local Seattle small business owner with no criminal history. This is a man who's married to an American citizen with deep ties to our local community who was working hard to pursue a legal pathway to lawful permanent residence. For the federal government to waste its resources to forcefully detain and deport him and tear apart an American family is plain sick. Our immigration enforcement should be focused on violent criminals and keeping Americans safe. Deporting hardworking people like Eduardo makes no one safe. It's just cruel and wrong. And she went on to say that they had deported him basically overnight to Texas so that he wasn't anywhere close to his family, and they didn't even know where he was for a while, and it was a whole mess. And so, you know, again, I don't ever want to get to the place where I don't have empathy and I don't have a heart, but I'm like, you know, no criminal history, married to an American, been here 23 years, I feel bad for the wife. And I was sort of like, I'm torn about this one, right? I said, if Patty Murray's telling the truth, well, I shouldn't have fallen for it because she's not telling the truth. So this is what we got from ICE. ICE Seattle arrested illegal alien Eduardo Esperanza, 53, of Mexico, on July 23rd. He entered the United States illegally in 2002 across the border in California and was granted voluntary return. He illegally re-entered a second time at an unknown date and location without inspection by an immigration official. In 2005, he was arrested in Dodge City, Kansas for DUI. Says right now he's being held at the Northwest ICE Processing Center pending an immigration hearing as an alien present without admission or parole. So they deny two aspects of Senator Patty Murray's story. They say, no, this is someone who tried once to enter the country illegally and was returned back, and then entered again illegally at some point unknown. So he twice entered the country illegally and got a DUI in Kansas. So he does have a criminal history. And it wasn't just someone who came here 23 years ago, built a not life, never left, and all these things. No, he kept trying to come into the United States illegally. And that is different, especially when you're married to an American. You have 23 years to find a lawful way to come to the country, and marrying an American is a really good lawful way to do it. And he still chose not to. And I don't know if Patty Murray was lied to. Like, is a DUI on the top of the list of some of the violent offenses we've seen illegal aliens commit? No, but he does have a criminal history. So Patty Murray, she might have been lied to, but don't you think as a United States senator you'd check? No, they're just told something and they just regurgitate it. They're like, blah, they said this. And that's what the news media does as well. They don't actually look because they don't care because they're spinning a narrative. And then the family says he was flown away to Texas and ICE told us, no, he's in Tacoma. He's at the ICE, Northwest ICE processing facility. So where does that lie come from? So these elected leaders, and I should have known better, buddy, you should know better by now. They don't care. They don't care to tell the truth. They're just trying to orange man bad and have everybody freak out about what's happening in this country. And that is a bummer because, as I said, like, there are some people I'm going to feel bad for. But if you start to lie about every single individual arrested by ICE, I'm not going to feel bad for any of them because you just can't tell the truth. So it's outrageous. All right, we are going to have an update on what's happening in the city of Seattle with the chief of police, with the mayor coming up momentarily. Actually, there's some breaking news I'm going to get to in a second that we need to kind of make sense of. But first, former Seattle City Attorney Ann Davison, who was just a godsend for the city. You know, there's only so much she could do as a Republican in that position, but that's someone who at least cared about, you know, prosecuting crime, consequences for illegal actions. No, we can't just let people use drugs out in the open on the streets. So Ann Davison lost her re-election to a socialist, which we all know how that's going. There's a socialist in the mayor's office. Now there's a socialist in the city attorney's office. But she still wants to be involved, and she has teamed up with We Heart Seattle. They had a fundraiser recently for something they're called Workout and Recovery Gym. Help us build the bridge from addiction to confidence and community. And so they've teamed up with Q Gym because Ann Davison loves working out. And you could tell by looking at the lady, she's just fit. And she said, look, you know, working out gives people, you know, good habits. It gives them something to look forward to. It gives them a community to build. So they partner with Q Gym in the Stadium District, and they're going to start to do these workout classes for people who are in active recovery from addiction. And I just think it's a fantastic idea. And so Ann was nice enough to come on the show today and tell us about it. So let's talk about Workout and Recover Gym. So where is this born out of? What's the idea?
Well, it is born out of me alone in the gym doing a back squat. And I'm kind of kicking myself that why didn't I think about it years ago? I just assumed that this is kind of going on. I had a lot to focus on, when I did take over. And I just assumed this is built out, right? Like, again, when I had been a resident in Seattle for 30 years, I assumed reentry post-custody was built out because I heard a lot of talk focused on the criminal defendant, right? And so I assumed all these reentry things were planned out for a criminal defendant. And I've learned that there just really is not. You've been addicted to a substance for a long time, and now you are depleted physically, mentally, all the things. And we got you now into treatment, but what is your prospect of a brighter, better future for you? How are you actually going to build that out? Treatment providers are busy in the recovery space, but like as people are going on it, what do you do next? So I reached out to Andrea Suarez at We Heart Seattle. I said, is this happening in Seattle? Like, why isn't this happening if it's not happening? And she said she didn't know of anybody doing it. And I thought, well, this is ridiculous because I get so much out of it and I'm not in recovery. I fully believe it will help people in recovery. And so it really is just this bringing together of nonprofit treatment providers, of people in recovery, providing a way where those multiple nonprofits, right, now funnel in and participate in what is a regular group exercise gym, but have some recovery specific classes, and then allow people to, as they progress in their own recovery, incorporate them into other classes. So we're providing a way for re-socialization. We're providing a way to build work ethic, physical strength, mental grit, new social circle, all at the same time, replacing a bad habit with a healthy habit. When they have a lot of time on their hands, we don't want people, what are you going to do? You don't want to use, we want to use your time wisely. You can come now and get, you know, positive endorphins from group exercise. I just simply can't find a negative aspect about it. It just helps build that progression.
It is such a, and I haven't really heard about it, but you're right. And I know some people are, you know, like, oh, you have people with an addictive personality. You don't want just them to replace that addiction with something else. Yeah, we do. I'm sorry. Like if it's fentanyl, yeah, we do. I would like them at the gym if that's the addiction that they take on. That's a good thing. So is this an existing gym that is going to allow you to come in and do this? Or are you guys like opening a new gym? What are you doing?
Yeah, I'm all about multi-purpose projects. And so this is an existing gym. It's where I go. It's where I've been working out. It's right behind Lumen Field. It is literally on light rail on First Avenue in Pioneer Square. So if you can get to light rail, you can get to this gym. It is right there behind Lumen Field. So it is in the heart of where people would come maybe to use. We don't want people to come and use, obviously. And so it's an existing gym that is partnering with this idea and with We Heart Seattle to provide a space, like another place where people can come, and it can be built out for people coming out of incarceration, right? Again, reintegration into society. Where is that soft place to reintegrate into society, post-recovery, post-incarceration? And then we can eventually move into prevention, right? Teenagers after school, like that young adult where there's not a space, if they don't have a place where they can belong, you can come and work, like do the work out there, right? So it's prevention of addiction, but we'll move to that first, but Seattle needs us to focus on recovery because we don't really have that dialed in very well yet.
Yeah. Is this going to be, though, you know, for a specific population of people that are already on that path toward recovery? I imagine it's not for, like, you know, if you're living in a tent down by the stadium that you can just stop in.
It actually will have a progression of levels. And so Andrea and her board, that is a great advisory group for this space, evidently they're advising 48 hours, you're clean, you can go exercise. Now, that doesn't mean that we're going to have a gym full of people like that, because that is not necessarily ready. But if they're in a treatment program and we're working with caseworkers, sometimes that whole treatment provider's cohort might come to a class that is for people in recovery specifically. And then we can take attendance and participation and show punctuality. Maybe they then have 3 months of I've come and coming here, and I can now show to a job reference, I have the ability to show up on time. and then take that to a place of employment. And then maybe they're out of the recovery classes and they come into the other classes that are at the gym. Maybe it's like people with me, like me, or other people that are not in recovery. And then you're building the layers of social networking, resocialization, right? This is how you act with others. This is the trust we have to have with one another. This is why I need my son who's learning to drive, understand we all have to stop at the stop sign, right? This is how we all have to do it. And we have to believe we all do it that way most of the time. And so you got to get them out of the antisocial behavior that has been on the street. Where is that going to be learned by? It's going to be learned in these types of classes with other people doing hard work. You see them in your sidelines and you're like, well, they're not quitting and that person's not quitting. I don't want to quit. I don't want to be the one who first quits. And so it builds that positive peer pressure and it builds a way to resocialize, getting people from recovery, post-incarceration, prevention for kids. Like it really does have all the circles all together. And so I really do invite anyone that's listening to your show, Brandy, to participate with us. You can come to class, you can be a donor, or if you're in recovery for 20 years and you're like, I want to come help be kind of someone that's mentoring, you can come and help out like that. If you want to coach, you can come help coach, all those types of things. But it's really, to me, if we don't see people stepping forward in this type of a space, in a positive policy space, that we don't have to rely on tons of tax dollars. We don't have to, it doesn't take 10 years to build it out. Yeah. It really is just put a couple ideas together and people will come and it will work. And so, you know, even if it helps 30% in recovery, it's not going to be the answer for everyone. We know that, but it might be the answer for many. And so that's why I think it's important.
Yeah. I don't want the government involved. You're right. It would take 5 years. They'd figure it out. It would cost $1 billion and it'd be all these rules. I think it's cool to maybe get some of the pro athletes involved and get them in there teaching. But I want to see Ann Davison in there teaching, doing it. What's your workout of choice?
I will not be a coach. I only coach my kids in soccer. I'm a collegiate soccer player. But I believe in this so much. Like I never did pull-ups, but I can do pull-ups now after doing this for about 10, 12, 14 years. But my favorite one, I think we sent you some video clips of our little video we did. I really do like the burpee. And most people are like, that's awful. But I know. But think about life. You fall down on your face so many times. And if you can't get back up mentally or physically, you're probably in a pretty dire strait. And so I have to know that for myself, a single mom, teenagers, I got to be able to, you know, if I trip and fall, I got to be able to get up. And mentally, I think I have to be able to do that because what else are you going to live for, right? What else are you going to do if you just get one defeat and then you're done? And I don't operate that way, clearly.
Yeah, and I love that idea. I mean, I think you have to look for creative solutions to this drug crisis that's been plaguing Seattle for years. And there's no follow through. You know, they'll put people in an apartment and they'll be like, oh, we did something great. And then they'll just turn it into a drug den and they'll die there and nobody will check on them. There is no like Jay Inslee when he did his right of way initiative where they cleared encampments off of government, you know, highways and stuff. He was like, oh, this is a big success. They spent like $1 million per person and they never did follow throughs. They could never tell you. Did they just get in a tent and go somewhere else? Did they die from an overdose? What happened to them? Nobody knew. $1 million per person. Nobody even knew what happened to all of those people. And so there has to be follow through. You have to get creative. And we really think about that. You know, giving somebody somewhere, even for me, I hate working out. Despise it. I'm the most disorganized person there is. Love to, I will put stuff off for years. And so when I want to work out, I do a class workout. I tell a friend, I'm going to go, you want to go with me? And then I'm like, well, I can't cancel because I told Sarah to come with me today. And so you give them something to look forward to, a community to build. I think it's a great idea. And anything that We Heart Seattle is involved in, I'm just on board with because they do a tremendous amount of work with very little money. So I like this idea. And if you want to learn more, you can go to watchthis.org, watchthis.org. That segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for their newsletter to be alerted to opportunities to do just that. All right, coming up next, we've got some breaking news on the drama unfolding in the city of Seattle about why it took the police department and the mayor's office more than 5 hours to brief the public after a mass shooting on Sunday. First, if you are, you know, concerned about your retirement portfolio, given everything that's happening right now in the Middle East with the price of oil, AI, crypto, tech, just get a second opinion with our friend Zach Abraham at Bulwer Capital. He's my money manager. He's Nicole's money manager. He's my mom's money manager. And he's just an honest person about, you know, for instance, he voted for Trump, but he's more than willing to be honest and take a close look at things that the president is doing that might put your retirement at risk. And so you have to have someone who can be clear-eyed when looking at all of this. So he'll, in his Know Your Risk portfolio review, he'll talk about how Bulwer Capital is focused on risk management. They're constantly looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. So it's a big thing. You're planning for your dream retirement. Get a second opinion with our friend Zach Abraham. It doesn't cost a thing. Schedule your Know Your Risk portfolio review today at knowyourriskpodcast.com. Knowyourriskpodcast.com. And with that, let's get to some breaking news in our segment, Unbelievable. All right. So, of course, all eyes are on the city of Seattle right now and the failed leadership of socialist Mayor Katie Wilson, who had her first big test when there was a mass shooting at Bite of Seattle on Sunday. And she failed miserably. And leadership of the police department, the chief of police wasn't even in town. Apparently, he's hardly ever in town on the weekends. He also failed miserably. So we have a few updates on this. So the Center Square, about 45 minutes ago, dropped this story, the headline, exclusive, texts point to possible delay in shooting news conference. So it has literally a picture of what I think is Bob Ferguson's cell phone from the context of things. So a little bit of, again, context of what happened. So there's a 5.5 hour delay in the press conference from when the shooting happens to when they actually come out and brief the press. And you'll remember the viral clip of Jeremy Harris being like, why are we waiting? And the police said, we're waiting for dignitaries. And the reporters lost their minds. Like, you're making us wait for dignitaries? And ever since then, there's been a battle of information. Katie Wilson says, oh, no, we weren't making them wait for dignitaries. And the police are like, well, yeah, she was, but whatever. If the mayor says that, the mayor says that. And they're kind of like giving deference to the mayor, maybe not wanting to make her look like a liar. But text messages obtained by the Center Square seem to suggest that this really was a Katie Wilson problem. And that's not a surprise. She's hardly ever had a job in her life. And so at some point, she fell short. So it says, Seattle Mayor Katie Wilson initially told Governor Bob Ferguson a briefing might be held the evening of the Bite of Seattle shooting, but her office sent no subsequent text confirming it, messages obtained by the Center Square show. Questions have persisted over why the public briefing did not begin until more than 4 hours, it's actually more than 5 hours, after the July 26 shooting, with some sources claiming it was delayed to accommodate elected officials. According to the text messages obtained through a public records request filed on Monday with Ferguson's office, Wilson contacted Ferguson via cell phone at 7:41 p.m. Sunday night, saying that, quote, we are pulling together a press conference call now and likely a press conference later. And remember, we'd previously heard back from Brianna Aho with the governor's office because we were trying to figure out what freaking dignitary took 5 hours to get there that they decided to wait for. Was it the governor? Was it Jayapal? Was it Katie Wilson? And Ferguson's office clearly did not like that insinuation that it might have been him. And they said, nope. When it happened, the governor, I think, was at a child's sporting event. He came up immediately. I think he was here by 9 p.m. or something. And so it was like, all right, so he was here. So it wasn't really them they were waiting on until 11 or whenever they ended up actually having the press conference. And it sounds like Katie Wilson just sort of stopped communicating with the governor and the other dignitaries who were waiting to show up. So it says, Ferguson texted back, I could be there by 9 p.m. So again, she's texting him 7:41, saying we're pulling together a press conference. He says, okay, I could be there by 9 p.m. Center Square says there are no further text messages sent to or from either Wilson or Ferguson confirming the press conference. The text messages were the only record provided. And you can see in the message in the picture, at some point, it's 10:13 p.m. And Ferguson says, please call me. So he's clearly there already. He's there by 9. Still no press conference, doesn't get a message back. This is now 3 hours later from the mayor confirming anything. So he says, hey, can you call me? And so, and then she finally eventually gets on the phone with them. They end up having a press conference. Says there's been disputes as to the reason why the press conference started so long after the shooting, which occurred around 6 p.m. and left three people dead, four others injured. The press conference was initially supposed to take place at 9:45. It was delayed until 10:45. Seattle Police Sergeant Brian Pritchard told media at 10:30 that the delay was for dignitaries to arrive, according to Fox 13. Well, Wilson has denied that was the case. An SPD source told Fox 13 they had wanted to do the public briefing earlier, but were told to delay. All signs point to Katie Wilson. All signs point to Katie Wilson. And you can tell by the speed with which Governor Ferguson's office provided a literal picture of his phone to the center square, which isn't a particularly friendly outlet to him, is he wanted to make it clear, like, I was there by 9. At the very least, if they were waiting for me, they could have done it at 9, but they didn't. It's an hour and 45 minutes past that. And meanwhile, Katie Wilson's MIA. I think I know exactly what happened. I think that Katie Wilson was absolutely over her head. And she was trying to get a hold of herself and enough information where she felt comfortable speaking in front of cameras because it's just not something she's good at. And I think she wanted to be like, I bet she was practicing. It's the only thing that makes sense. A source tells Hannah Kim, Hannah Kim's very well sourced in the police department, we wanted to do it way earlier. And then at 10:30, police are saying, we're waiting for dignitaries. And Katie says, no, that's not the case. Well, we know they weren't waiting for Bob Ferguson. Pramila Jayapal lives just down the road. Katie Wilson was the only one not ready. And she wants to blame this people and these people, and they're lying. Katie Wilson, it's you. I mean, I called for the chief of police, his resignation yesterday, who we'll hear from momentarily. But Katie Wilson is not fit for this job. And we knew that when they elected a Nepo baby who hadn't had a job in her life. But when you're not ready as the mayor of a major city, people can die. Serious things can happen. I mean, there's still shooters at large that we haven't even got an accurate description of yet. We've got a police chief who, you know, is basically threatening members of the press with physical intimidation for asking reasonable questions. The city of Seattle, this is a clown show after a mass shooting. It's embarrassing. So, of course, we've been talking a lot about Chief Sean Barnes. And he, you want to play the him being aggressive. So let's just play that clip again. Barnes being aggressive with the reporter.
I have been here working as hard as I can for this city from the day I got here. Do you got that?
There are reports that you are not in town often.
There are reports are wrong. Do you understand?
Let's go, man. Let's go.
You understand?
So when we're
I work.
Let's go. Let's go. Let's go. Thank you.
Yeah, that was horrific. So during yesterday's press conference, he did briefly mention this confrontation with South Seattle Emerald reporter.
Chief Barnes, can you address what exactly happened yesterday, that heated exchange following the press conference? What was that all about?
Yeah, I would describe it as a heated exchange, that's okay. Listen, I respect our media. I respect what you do. I consider you a big part of the community. I wish I could do it, but I don't have a face for television. But let me say this. I'm always passionate about what I do as a police officer. I'm always passionate about what I do as a community member. And sometimes that passion is in full display, especially if someone is questioning my work ethic or my integrity. But I understand that your job is to ask tough questions. And so I respect that. I want you to know that. And that's for everyone in here. You have a tough job, and I do understand that.
Yeah, you don't respect it. And it was a heated exchange. There is no one on the planet besides you who would say that wasn't a heated exchange. It was totally inappropriate. It should, if one of your officers had done that in the field to a citizen or a journalist and it was captured on camera, they would get days off. And you'd put out a statement about it, condemning their behavior. You're unfit to serve. You should resign. Our friend Jonathan Cho was in the room for that press conference. And Chief Sean Barnes still will not, like, commit and give a clear answer on how often he's in the city of Seattle and how often he's back home in Chicago.
How often do you travel to Chicago? Your wife and kids still live there. I'd like to know how often on weekends you travel there and who's paying for that?
Certainly, I don't travel as often as I would like to. I think any reports that I'm gone every weekend are grossly misstated. I don't have that kind of money. I'm here in Seattle. I love the neighborhood that I live in. I have love my community. They love me. They know me. They see me all the time. You know, don't love the rent that I'm paying, but, you know, affordability is something that we're working on. Is that right, Mayor?
That's right.
So wow. I feel good about being here in Seattle. I love this community.
Didn't answer the question. And, sir, you make $370,000 a year. Little tone deaf for you to be complaining about the cost of living. And you know what? If you really thought it was that expensive, then you wouldn't maintain a home in Chicago and a home here. Most people, when they get a job and move across the country, if they really plan to commit to that community, they move their family with them. So maybe that's why you don't like the cost of things, because you're paying to live in Chicago and you're paying to live in Seattle because you don't have any plans to stay here. And you still, Monday, Sunday, 3 days later, you have not answered the question. How often do you fly home to Chicago? How often are you gone? You make $370,000 a year. You are the chief of police in one of the largest cities in America that's going through, frankly, a public safety crisis. Either you're committed to the city or you're not committed to the city. And the fact that he won't answer the question tells you everything you need to know. That's probably the sixth or seventh time that a reporter has asked him some version of that question. And every single time he punts and he turns it into some sort of joke about, oh, the cost of living. Oh, we're fixing that, Mayor, right? He's got to go. And if he won't resign, I said it yesterday, the mayor of the city of Seattle could show for once that she has a backbone, some semblance of leadership capability, and she should fire him on the spot. And by the way, Mayor, Madam Mayor, I have heard there's a lot more coming out about Sean Barnes. So this is my friendly advice to you. Don't wait to fire him until it is absolutely unavoidable, because at that point, you'll just look like, oh, a weakling who waited too long. Do it now. Look strong. Make a decision as mayor. Put a police chief in there who will do something. All right. We'll get to national news coming up next. You already know that I need to talk about Anthony Fauci and his pleading the fifth before Congress today. This stuff has been wild. Should we just get right to it? Because honestly, it's insane. Okay. So Anthony Fauci, of course, the Fauci Diaries came out, which I realized. So I was reading excerpts. Senator Rand Paul had got his hands on Fauci's diaries, and he would keep like a digital, you know, paragraph during the pandemic of just, here's what happened today, here's how many deaths. And then he would just, oh, and I was in the news and everybody loves me and I'm so famous, everybody waves and cheers. It was disgusting. Then only to find out that it was, he has done this for years. He's kept a diary for years and years and years. And he was talking about how famous he was way back in 2013 in his diary. The guy's a narcissist. So that was one thing. But then there were also some really serious, sickening things in there. Like he's over at Jake Tapper of CNN's house having dinner while he's telling the rest of us that we've got to like watch our loved ones die through a window and can't go to family members for Thanksgiving. You know, he's privately saying that he knows that the virus didn't come from, you know, a wet market, but publicly hadn't been that definitive. You know, doesn't really know. Things he was saying publicly don't align with what he was saying privately in his journal. He was on the news saying, I never shut down schools. Don't blame me for that. And in his diary, he was saying, got Bill de Blasio to shut down New York City schools. Got Gavin Newsom to do the same. There's even something in there about Jay Inslee and convincing Jay Inslee to do the lockdowns. This was the guy pulling the puppet strings of elected leaders across the country and making you do things that he himself either wasn't doing or didn't believe. So he gets hauled in to testify in front of Congress. And what did he do? Well, he pled the fifth.
The only conclusion I can reach is that the sole reason he is calling me before this committee is to get me to say something, anything, that could vindicate his repeated public pledges that I end up, in his words, quote, behind bars, unquote. Any reasonable person who has followed his unhinged obsession with me would readily come to the same conclusion. Therefore, although it pains me to do so, because of the respect I have for the legislative branch of government and my decades-long record of cooperating with Congress, under the advice of my attorneys, I will invoke my right under the Fifth Amendment of the Constitution to refrain from answering your questions. Thank you.
Innocent people don't invoke their Fifth Amendment rights. In fact, that's not even how the law works. I mean, you can't invoke the Fifth unless it's something that is preventing self-incrimination. And so is there even something to invoke the Fifth about? Senator Josh Hawley pressed him on that.
Chairman, well, nothing says honesty like taking the Fifth, huh, Doc? Let's try something. What day of the week is it today?
On the advice of counsel, I respectfully decline to answer based upon my rights under the Fifth Amendment to the Constitution.
What color tie are you wearing?
On the advice of counsel, I respectfully decline to answer based upon my rights under the Fifth Amendment to the Constitution.
What color is the carpet in front of you?
On the advice of counsel, I respectfully decline to answer based upon my rights under the Fifth Amendment to the Constitution.
Let's just get one thing straight. You don't have any rights under the Fifth Amendment because you've been pardoned, as you very well know, as the Supreme Court has been clear for a century and more. Brown versus Walker, 1896. When he has been pardoned, he may not stand upon his privilege. You know that. Your lawyers sitting behind you now shifting nervously in their chairs. They know it. This isn't about the Constitution. This isn't about the law. This is about contempt. Contempt for this body and contempt for the American people. But I think I know why you're doing it. It's because you don't want to answer questions. It's because you did all kinds of terrible things. It's because during the pandemic, you got rich, didn't you? You got rich. While people were dying, hundreds of thousands of Americans, over a million in the end, and you were getting rich, and not only were you doing that, you were using federal employees with taxpayer money to apply for and solicit cash prizes for you personally. Cash prizes totaling over $1 million. You did all of that during the pandemic, didn't you? That's a question.
On the advice of counsel, I respectfully decline to answer based upon my rights under the Fifth Amendment.
When you've been pardoned, you can't incriminate yourself, and therefore you cannot plead the Fifth Amendment. How many times did he do it? 111 times, Anthony Fauci invoked his Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination, even when asked the color of his tie. And he thought somehow this would make him look better. If he doesn't think he did anything wrong, then he should have no problem answering their questions. And I get it. We're in a hyper-political environment right now, where political prosecutions have become a thing, and political non-prosecutions have become a thing, and where our justice system has been weaponized, I would argue, at times by people on both sides of the political aisle. But he has a pardon, a sweeping pardon, a preemptive pardon from President Joe Biden. And he still wants to stand there, sit there and say, I'm not answering a single one of your questions. At one point, so Fauci had a bunch of attorneys with him. And one of them was sitting up with him at the table. And Rand Paul decided to kick that attorney out of the room.
You are not invited here for testimony, sir. You are being disruptive. Would you behave this way in a courtroom? No, because the judge would put you in jail. I can't do that today, but I can have you escorted from the premises. So I would say, sir, sit quietly and don't say another word. I said, sit quietly. You are not recognized. Another word and you're gone. The attorneys are not recognized. In fact, the attorney was told not to sit at the table, and he's not obeying that recommendation. There's a row behind you, sir. That's where you were told to sit, and you're not. And now you're disrupting the proceedings. And so, look, this is the way Anthony Fauci wants to be remembered, for a lawyer not listening to the rules. That's the way you want to be remembered, and that's what you're going to do. You are not recognized, sir.
Security, please remove him from the room.
Bye. I mean, absolutely insane. You know, the sad part about it is the American people deserve some answers. At the very baseline of what this guy wrote in his diary and what he said publicly. And if he's a true public servant, as he claims to be, one of the most wonderful public servants ever, saved lives, did all these things, then he would justify it. He would. You could even say, I misspoke, you know, I forgot that I'd emailed or called Bill de Blasio and Gavin Newsom and advised they close down schools. Forgot about that. Oh, having dinner with Jake Tapper? Oh, yeah, I mean, I had dinner outside. Well, they had dinner inside. We just talked to each other through the window. You know, offer some sort of explanation. People weren't able to bury their loved ones. They weren't able to hold their hand one last time as they took their final breath. People lost their livelihoods. They've never been the same financially. Lifelong public servants lost their jobs after serving and protecting their communities because they wouldn't take a vaccine that they felt like they didn't know enough about. Kids lost years of education. And you won't answer a single question about any of it. And you know how you know this is bad? You know how you know what's been revealed about Anthony Fauci is bad? That Senator John Fetterman took it seriously enough to wear a suit today to the hearing.
It's not about much more your regrets, but I have one. And that is early on that there was the theory that the virus could have emerged from the lab. And early on, that became like a right-wing kinds of theory. And I thought it seemed to make sense. Now, there was a really advanced lab that was close by, and then you have this unknown virus out. So, but that became a very partisan thing. And now, it seems now it's more and more emerging theory that that would have come from the lab. Now, you know, I think that the next time our nation's facing something like this, we are not become, you know, as I might have been, blinded by the partisan idea that maybe the truth might come from a side that's different than you are. But I think we should really be willing to pursue truth, no matter where that may have emerged, you know, after for all of that.
Yeah, and pursuing truth means you don't blindly believe things. You're open-minded to the ideas of others, even if you don't agree with them politically, as Senator John Fetterman said. And this was really the beginning of my wake-up, you know, the lack of criticality of the media when I was working in mainstream news and just going along with everything that Governor Jay Inslee wanted and dictated. And we can never allow that to happen again. And it was just, and that's really, I mean, the environment that we're in right now, where insane, you know, people are led to believe that they're correct on things like boys and girls sports. I mean, I think all of that came from the divisions that were formed during the pandemic. And we all went into our corners and we never emerged from our corners. And, you know, John Fetterman, I mean, he's just become such a voice of sanity in all of this. And for him to say, I feel misled as a Democrat, I know, shocking. I feel misled by you, sir. So the question is there anything that Fauci can be prosecuted for, you know, or should be prosecuted for if the pardon didn't exist? I asked subscribers in our daily subscriber show poll, have you seen anything you believe warrants criminal charges against Anthony Fauci? Nicole, hello, yes or no?
Well, I've been paying attention to some of this, but I don't know that I've seen any of that data. I mean, I just think it's quite clear that it was he was overblowing it for his own benefit. I don't know how that's a criminal charge at this point, but I'm sure that if I had stuff in front of me, I could
figure it out. What statutes, and again, put the pardon aside for a moment, but what statutes would apply basically to his conduct? You know, I wonder if there's something in there with him having people solicit these awards in like science and medicine for him, so he got like millions of dollars and doing that with government resources. Mm-hmm. That's part of it. But yeah, I mean, overblowing something or lying per se isn't a crime.
Lied under oath about where he thought it came from. Because I mean, now I feel like it's been clear he knew early on that it was possible it came from a lab and he denied that.
Yeah, so lying under oath for sure, but the pardon would cover that. The one thing I would say is he's not pardoned from state charges. So could you have
individual states.
Governors in states or attorney generals in states say that your lies cost people lives or whatever it is. So I guess in a sense, maybe he's pleading the fifth on the potential that information could be used against him in state charges. 90% of you say, yes, Fauci straight to prison. Carlene says, fry the rat, take everything he has, give it to those who lost their homes, businesses, lives over his narcissistic ego. I definitely don't think he should have been able to profit from the pandemic in the way that he has. No. Criminals aren't supposed to profit from their crimes. And I feel like he has profited from other people's and just in general, like he's profited from the deaths of millions of people. Julie, we lived it. He lied to us about the origins of the virus. He also lied about his involvement in gain of function research. I mean, honestly, I think he should go to prison for what he did to the Beagles. I'm still on the Beagles thing. Joel, narcissism knows no limits. Fauci embodies a narcissistic personality. Let's see here. Bully Mom, the fact that he lied about the origination and spread throws doubt on everything. How many people's lives were ruined because of him? How many elders suffered due to a lack of social interactions? How many families couldn't be with loved ones that passed away because of his lies? Our economy still has not recovered. Our children still struggle. Makes me wonder if that is how the far left has gotten away with the brainwashing of our children because they were let into our homes via Zoom school. Morgan, he should have been arrested for what he did during the AIDS epidemic and recommending AZT, which killed off the remaining healthy white blood cells. The FDA said the cancer medicine was too toxic to treat cancer. Yeah, Matt says, so many crimes against humanity, so much perjury. Don't even get me started about the dogs. See, Matt's mind is where I'm at. Don't even get me started about the dogs. Don't even.
That's all I can see when I look at him, really.
All right, let's get to the comments from the live stream in a moment. First, we're all looking to save money. You know, we've got gas prices stacking up, home energy prices stacking up. There's very little that we can do about that. But have you taken a second look at your insurance? I mean, how long has it been? Have you had the same insurance provider for years and years and years? The First Mark Challenge is free to take, and they could get you better insurance. They could save you money. Mike and I just saved $2,000 on our renewal. We hear from people all the time saying, I'm saving $100 a month. And you know what? $100 a month, that's $1,200 a year. And you're talking more than $20,000 20 years from now that you would have saved just by making that call to First Mark Insurance. So what they'll do, they schedule time with you, talk to you on the phone, and just go over your current insurance. It's a really easy process. It's a totally casual, chill conversation. They are a local business. So it'll be someone here who actually is in Washington. And they'll talk about, you know, what's going on with your family, your current insurance, what's working and not working. Then they'll go out, shop their market of carriers, come back with their recommendations. And I love it because they also switched us to a car insurance carrier that gives you those little checks back. I never had one of those before.
Yeah.
Gives you the checks back when you don't have a claim. And I kind of like those. I know they're like $70. And it's like, well, no, I got to cash a $70 check. But it's kind of fun, right?
Yeah, such a pain in the butt.
Well, I hate going to the bank. And I don't like those little mobile things.
What?
It never works.
It always works.
Never works.
I haven't been to the bank in
years. Of my existence.
Oh, my goodness.
Anyway, but I like it. So there's a lot of perks. And then, you know, when you need them, you pick up the phone and a human being in Washington State answers. I'm like, oh, so nice. How are you? Anyway, firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance companies. So they always have your best interest in mind. All right. Comments from the live stream. Big Princess, give the storm the Bud Light treatment.
I mean, yeah, I don't want to support the team anymore because of especially the owner is acting like that. Like, it's one thing if it's a, you know, somebody that's connected to the team, you don't want to have the whole team to suffer. But no, the owner, absolutely outrageous.
And we spent, so not just me, but like we had someone else, like I was asking people favors to buy these tickets because they were really expensive. And look, I am just a humble podcaster. I bought a couple of them. But I wasn't willing to buy all of them. But I was like, the girls will really enjoy this. So I was on the phone trying to like call in favors and stuff. I also have a funny. And so anyway, my point about that is we gave the team a lot of money last night.
Yes.
Unfortunately.
Oh, just for scalpers.
Well, no, I mean, yeah, season ticket holders. Okay, good point. Two of them were like general, like had to buy from the team. And yes, four of them were people. Sure.
Stop.
Never mind. But it was really funny. So Jennifer Say with XXXY Athletics.
Yeah.
Like we put this together really last minute. And so like what, 5 days ago, she was like, oh my gosh. I'm like, we're trying to buy up some front row seats. We need all the girls in XXXY gear. Some of them already had it, you know. And she's like, okay, Monday morning, first thing, I'm going to put together a package and I'm going to ship it overnight. I'm like, I don't know if that's going to make it. And so because we just didn't have enough for everybody who was going into the game. And so all of a sudden we got this. We're tracking it. And she spent like $200 to ship this box. And then it's delayed. So it was not going to get there. So we're in the middle of the show yesterday. We get these texts. Jennifer Say was putting the gear on a plane.
With an employee.
With an employee to come to Seattle to try to get these t-shirts here on time. I was like, oh my gosh, I love this woman. Because she's like, this is a great opportunity. Yeah. You know, we're definitely going to be on cameras and stuff. And then the plane got delayed. So it was like not going to get here in time.
Abort, abort.
So thank God, Let's Go Washington had done a run of shirts with XXXY that had it on the front. And so they dug in their warehouse, brought us a box of stuff, but it was like extra, extra larges and like smalls. And I'm like, that's okay. We'll make it work. And so we figured it out. But Jennifer Say was like, and then the shirt showed up today at my house. UPS guy. Like 9 a.m. Here you go. I'm like, thanks.
Yeah.
So we'll find a good use for them.
The shirts look great on TV, though.
Yeah, they do look good on TV. But anyway, a couple super chats. $25 from Dave and $5 from Blink. Between this coverage and the one on Monday after the Bite of Seattle fiasco, I feel compelled to send you money to keep up the phenomenal work you do. Well, that is very nice of you. Thank you, guys. All right. You want to get into the teens?
Blink says you're the best, by the way.
Thanks, Blink. Oh, thank you.
Chris says, does the WNBA encourage trans women to play in their league? No.
No,
of course not.
What needs to happen is, you know, some college level basketball players who didn't make it to the NBA need to just suck it up. And we'll put an end to this in one season. We'll put an end to it in one season. And you just got to somehow and then make a stink out of it. Like, I'm trans and I'm clearly good enough to play in the WNBA and they won't recruit me or whatever it is. Make them put you on the team. Take a spot from a woman. Pray to God it's from a black woman. So then you got the double sort of, took a spot from a woman and a black woman and a gay, like gay woman. Mm-hmm. Make sure it's the triple threat. It'll be done in a season. And all these women who are, I mean, one of the players was going like this to the teen girl sitting next to me. It's and wild. I was like, ma'am, I wanted to say, you would lose to every single man one-on-one in the NBA.
Yeah.
Like, what is wrong with you?
I don't really think it's about that issue. They've decided they hate anybody that doesn't think like them, whatever. It's not about this one issue because, again, it's just not. It's just not. They would lose. It's just not about this issue. They just have decided to hate people that don't agree with
anybody they
them.
Think are conservative. Mm-hmm. Average Joe, don't let your enemy use your morals and beliefs against you when they do not hold them themselves. This is pure evil, and the bitter lesbian was trying her hardest to hurt these young ladies. Shame. Yeah, bitter, and I know I called her an old hag, but she is an old hag. Like, you don't do that. That's just outrageous. No. And then Sue Bird watched her do it. You know, of course, she's sitting right next to her. She knows what she did. You know, she went back and bragged about it. Good grief.
Wow.
All right.
From Mo, if the seats cost $1,300 each, that woman should have been thanking them for their for being there.
Yeah, thanks for being here. True. Yeah. I mean, those girls had better seats than Doug Baldwin and Sue Bird.
I love that.
They had great seats. SAD Dave, not exactly the best business model to accost a paying customer. Is absolutely no excuse for that. Not surprised in Seattle, though. Glad it was just a verbal confrontation because let's face it, it could have been a lot worse. And I'll tell you, I was ready. That feeling that came up inside of me, I was like, had I been there or had she come over to us and the girls next to me, she would have been on the floor. She would have been flat on the ground. And I don't care if she had a cane and she was an old woman. That was what was welling up inside of me. And I know violence is not the answer, but a couple times in one's life, violence is the answer. And I'm like, I would have absolutely, absolutely thrown a punch at that woman. Mm-hmm. All right. Let's move on to Senator Murray.
Yeah. So Senator Murray was wrong about the man apprehended by ICE over last week.
Yeah.
Let's the Elonius? I don't know what this
Eloist.
Name is. Eloist. I don't know how you
just
come up with random names for these weird names. This is why the left loves their optics. It's intended to invoke your sympathy.
Yeah,
it didn't matter. I don't know if she doesn't think that people will follow up or if she doesn't care.
Yeah, 100%. Matt, I was underage when Patty Murray was first elected. Now I have 4 grandkids. Yeah, she's past her prime for sure. All right, on Chief Barr is being criticized for everything. Let's be honest. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Looking up for Jesus says, I'm happy that they've made a buffoonery a buffoonery themselves on the national stage. We must have an election. We must have election integrity.
Yeah, I'm supposed to be on Laura Ingraham tonight to talk about what's happening in Seattle. But they always cancel on me. They always book me and they always cancel. So I may or may not be on Laura Ingraham.
I don't know. I think that they might want to talk about other things.
Yeah,
as well.
I was like, I thought they were contacting me about the WNBA thing, but they're like, no, what's happening in Seattle? Weiss Castle, the whole idea that police can't release known information without a formal press conference is completely absurd. I agree with that.
Yeah, I think that the tide is turning on this. I think people are real frustrated.
Yes.
I don't think she'd win an election if she ran right now.
Oh, like, no.
Right now.
No.
She's running in November.
We've had a series of one-term mayors of Seattle. Mm-hmm. She will be another one-term mayor. I've heard of rumblings of some particular person who might run who I would really support for the job, but I'm not going to.
Could they win?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Oh, interesting.
I mean, they're obviously a Democrat, but.
Right. But I mean, could they win? Would they survive even the socialist mob coming after them?
Nobody. Yeah, that's such a small faction.
Well, I mean, Harrell went down.
Oh, they'd handle it better than Harrell. Harrell was a terrible campaigner. So it's somebody who I think would be good. Okay. As good as you can get in Seattle. All right, on Fauci pleading the fifth.
Is that me? Darla says he took advantage of making an inflammatory opening statement filled with lies, then invoked a privilege he isn't legally entitled to. He's disgusting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Him and Rand Paul. Oof.
Yeah.
Fire.
Sassy. Philosophic cappuccino. Well, you can't incriminate yourself, but you can incriminate someone else. I'm pretty sure that is the reason. Yeah, he could incriminate someone else. He could also incriminate himself on state charges, I suppose. And then Mo Sterling said, J.K. Rowling retweeted you, so they probably won't cancel. They probably won't cancel what?
Laura Ingraham.
Oh, but the Laura Ingraham thing isn't about the trans issue. It's about Seattle, but we'll see.
But I do wonder, so when you plead the fifth like that, do you have to, can you not answer what color your tie is?
You Why could, do you but have he's, because to do that? The it's reason ridiculous. You don't pick and choose, and I think the most attorneys would say that, is because then they can't identify the specific questions that you are probably hiding something about. So you just plead the fifth on everything and you make it seem like it's a mockery, right? Like it's just so absurd. So, all right. Good stuff, Nicole. Yeah, good thank stuff. You. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. All right, Kelsey Grammer, and I'm so happy to learn that Kelsey Grammer is sane because I loved that show growing up. And it's so interesting because I watched that show as a kid, Frasier, and then I moved to Seattle. And I also collected Sonics cards as a kid and moved to Seattle. And I think it was like baked into my subconscious somehow.
Yeah. Well, whenever anybody asks me what I do, I'm like the Roz on Frasier.
On Frasier, yes. So he was on the Katie Miller podcast. He co-founded an education nonprofit called the American Revelation. So he says that his nonprofit is designed to kind of counteract the indoctrination and nonsense that's happening in education in the United States of America right now. And so he talked on Katie Miller's podcast about why education in schools just suck right now.
I think the educational community has really dropped the ball, probably deliberately in a lot of ways, but because they don't like the idea that we are a great country. That's something in our education system decided to think that we aren't and to teach our children that. And of course, if you're learning that from your teachers, we believe our teachers. We do. And if they say things like you come from a crap country, well, you know, you start to think, well, maybe they're right. I wonder why I come from a crap place. So that you end up searching your soul for why you're not a good person, why you aren't good anymore, why our country isn't good. So that means mom and dad aren't very good either, are they? And there's a whole series of questions that come into it that are, it's basically child abuse, what we're doing to our children. So I wanted to change that.
Why does education seem to self-select those type of educators?
Well, I'd hate to say it in any way that isn't a little bit, you know, like paranoid, I guess, but it was a plot, you know,
you think this is a conspiracy theory?
Absolutely. It's not a theory. It's a conspiracy.
Yeah. Well, you know, conspiracy, it's not a conspiracy theory. It's a conspiracy to do that is a really good way to put it. All right. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. What a wild week. It's about to get wilder because I learned some news just before the show today that almost left me in tears. Why do so many things happening that make me so upset? And and I'm going to lead the show with it tomorrow. It's got me angry, so I'll stew on that for 24 hours, and then I'll see you tomorrow see you on the live show. You guys, I promise I'm a happy person.
The show is therapy.
It's sure. If you'd like to support our show, I promise we're not going to give up on it. You can go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. It's $5 a month. I think that's a pretty good deal. And then I may or may not be on Laura Ingraham tonight. I think like 7:40 p.m. Eastern time. What is that? 4:40 p.m. Pacific time. Talking about the mess in the city of Seattle. Unless they cancel on me. See you tomorrow.